Welcome in to another edition of the Bama Baseline Podcast. I'm James Fletcher, alongside Luke Ratliff and Trevin Pierre-Noel. We got a lot to talk about today. Alabama took on the FAU Owls earlier this week, so we'll have
the Kiffin cronies.
Your full recap of that. We'll also get you ready for the Rhode Island Rams. We're going to talk to Will. In the third, we're going to have a list for you guys, and then we'll give our preview in the fourth quarter. So, guys, let's go ahead and get into this. The FAU game, big win for Alabama, first of the Nate Oates era. What were some of your thoughts?
I thought it was a very, very good showing by a shorthanded Bama team, honestly. You know, Bama got out there, didn't have Herbert Jones for the game, although I'm told he was available, but just didn't play him. First thing. Guys, did y'all see our starting lineup?
Yeah.
It was an interesting starting lineup to go out there.
Yeah, we went out with
four guards and a forward.
Yeah, we went out with Kyra Lewis, John Petty, Beadle Bolton, then freshman Jalen Forbes, then redshirt freshman. This was the kicker, Javian Davis.
Javian Davis got a start, and that was a lot of questions before the game about starting Javian, but he really proved his worth out there, led the team in scoring.
And in rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, a great showing for him. Really happy to see him perform so well in this game because it's been a long road for him. It had been about almost 2 years since he had played a basketball game, a real live-action basketball game before the start of this season, and struggled in game one. He did. Yeah. A lot of offensive fouls. He got frustrated, took him right out of a rhythm, and they really had to get him off the court quickly. Mm-hmm. But he bounces back, and to lead the team in scoring in a 78-59 victory, and FAU had some guys down low who were guarding him. But he really stepped up to the occasion, didn't let the early fouls rattle him like he did in game one. And he really just, for the rest of the game, was a constant factor on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, shout out to him. Have yourself a career day, young man. I just really hope that this becomes the norm for him. I really hope Nate Oates gives him another opportunity to start with up in Rhode Island, especially with Herb dealing with the stuff that he needs to. So I'm very happy for this guy. Again, like you said, 2 years in the making, this performance. So hope he just keeps the boat rowing. Also, shout out to Kyra Lewis. He had a great day, 16-6-8 with 3 steals. Shot pretty good from the field, free throw line, 3-pointer. Couldn't ask for a better day from Kyra Lewis.
Absolutely. And two, like, I keep going back to Javian Davis, right? Yeah. How cool is this? Right? You know, he comes out, he hasn't played a very good game against Penn. He comes out against Florida Atlantic and leads the team in scoring after not playing for 2 years, like James said. How cool is that, right? You know, it's stuff you love to see in college.
30 for 30s.
Yeah.
30 for 30s.
And to do it, I mean, he was a guy who was a project coming in. Mm-hmm. And he was not expected to really contribute until maybe even his redshirt junior year. And to come out and make an impact this early in the season, is it sustainable? That'll be be determined. But if it can be, I think that'll be huge for this team moving forward. On the other side of things, Jalen Forbes, he did struggle in his first start. I think he had a little bit of that Javian Davis effect from before.
The blind, like the headlights
right.
in the eyes kind of thing.
Got his first start, 0-for-4 from 3, 0-for-4 from the field. Only starter with a negative in the plus-minus, but hey, he's getting adjusted. First start in college. I think he'll settle down, and I think he'll contribute as the season continues. I don't know if he'll stay in the starting lineup.
Probably
much
not.
Longer.
Yeah,
because Herb Jones obviously will be an option before him when healthy. Alex Reese not fully healthy, so he was coming off the bench in this one. So this starting lineup is still very much in flux, and we'll have to see over the next few weeks where it lines up. And I think you want to have a set lineup before you head into conference play in January.
Even before conference play, you got North Carolina in the battle for Atlanta's coming up. So you need to go ahead and finalize what you're going to do with that situation. But on the flip side, you're talking about Forbes and his bad performance. But Shackelford, after having a terrible performance against Penn, came out shooting the lights out. against Florida Atlantic, 6-for-10, 4-for-7 from 3 points, had 17 points in the game coming off the bench. I think, again, like you said, it's kind of just like the lights in your eyes kind of thing. It's like, oh, this is my first start. You get that adrenaline pumping, and you just overshoot it sometimes. You know, it's just – it's a big moment for you. Just sometimes just need to calm down, and they'll both of those guys will contribute very much on the back end of the season once they get those nerves settled and start really actually feeling this college system.
Yeah, and I think Shackelford, maybe efficiency-wise in game one, not the best showing, but he's a guy who's going to get you points every night. He's going to put up the numbers.
Him and Kyra will be fighting for that top spot.
He's not afraid to keep shooting. If he gets into a rhythm, well, then, I mean, I think we could see some record-setting nights in Coleman Coliseum this year from Jaden Shackelford if he can continue to find the rhythm.
Absolutely. The question that – well, not really the question, but the things I look at here. Like, I'm looking at the stat sheet. Our perimeter defense. I don't know if it was our perimeter defense or they just had a cold shooting night. But Florida Atlantic shot 17% from the three-point line for the game. I like that.
That's Avery Johnson-esque.
I think it's got to be a little mixture of both. But I think it does say something about the guards. And, you know.
Well, hold on. Here's my favorite stat. We were 77% from the free throw line.
I knew this was coming.
I knew it was coming, too.
My favorite stat. 77% from the free throw line. Javion Davis missed two. That happens when you shoot volume. He's not used to shooting volume. John Petty missed one. It's okay. It's fine. You were 5-for-6. That's great. Alex Reese kind of just messed up the couple times he went to the line. It happens. But 77%. Guys, they reached the number that I always just – if they reach that number, I always say 75% from the free throw line. You reach that number, their odds of winning goes up so much more. And they did a great job with Florida Atlantic only shooting 35%. From the free throw line. Oh, it was such a great feeling.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Such a great feeling.
I look too, like I'm looking at, we won the rebounding battle by a wide margin. We won with 45-32 on rebounding. But 12 offensive rebounds for 16 second chance points in the game as opposed to 11 for FAU is pretty good.
That's a good day. And how about Tyler Barnes getting in the game?
Whoa, with time left.
Raymond.
Oh, the man.
Hawkins got in the game.
4 rebounds in 2 minutes.
The man was
gameplay.
You know, I think in 2 minutes of gameplay, he was on track for, what, 60 rebounds in the normal game?
He has drawn some great comparisons from the media. Darius Miles is one, yeah. Of course.
My personal favorite from Cecil Hurt, the Tuscaloosa News, compared him to Bola Lanyan.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You just can't replicate
some great
like
comparisons for Tyler Barnes.
I'm surprised he hasn't gotten Scalabrine yet.
That's another one that he could
I'm surprised he hasn't
draw.
Gotten Scalabrine yet.
So
the white mamba.
So we've gotten the backups got in, the walk-ons got to play a little bit at the end with Raymond Hawkins got some gameplay as well. But there is something we have to talk about. Breaking news since we last spoke. Javon Quinterly will not be playing this season for the Crimson Tide. What were your takeaways from the decision from the NCAA, aftermath.
Go ahead. You go first.
No, actually, Trevor, I want you to go first because I need somebody to calm me down because I'm not going to say something that's not good for FAA.
Well, not
good news
down.
Is FAA. We're not on.
You hear me? FCC.
We are not on FCC airwaves or the FAA. Which
the FAA.
Neither of those controllers on this
thing.
Podcast.
Here's my thing. What is the standard for the NCAA in terms of these waivers, right? Because at this point, I have no clue at all what these waivers are. Because it's not only here in basketball. It's also in every sport that apparently happens. There is a situation like what happened to that kid in, I want to say Virginia, where it was a football player in Virginia, and he had to transfer to Virginia because his mother was sick. And he wanted to be closer to his family. The NCAA denied his waiver even after the coach had left the program and even after he explained the reason why they denied his waiver to play that year immediately eligible.
Yeah, Brock
but
Kaufman.
But you let people like Tate Martell and Justin Fields, who just apparently just didn't get the playing time they wanted, and just grant them their waivers. Really, what is the standard here in the NCAA? Do I just need to go ahead and just toss all emotion out the window and just be like, well, my coach didn't play me, so I want to go somewhere else? Is that what it takes for me to finally just get my eligibility? Like, what are you guys doing? What standard are you holding these kids to? It is ridiculous.
You just hate to see a once proud organization like the NCAA resort to cowardice, and it's honestly disheartening. It's disheartening. I think you could hear that in the press release that Greg Byrne put out.
Yes. Yeah, where he's very strong press release.
I don't blame him. Good for him.
It's ridiculous.
And we've seen pushback from not only Alabama staff, but the James Wiseman situation at Memphis, the biggest topic in college basketball right now. Penny Hardaway not holding back punches, even wearing the more than an athlete shoes in a Twitter and Instagram post earlier this week. It was absolutely incredible to see the pushback from all of these schools as they go forward against the NCAA.
Look, I think the NCAA has reached the point where people are realizing how terrible they are as an institution. I'm just going to be honest with you guys.
Now, I have strong feelings on this subject. I've followed a lot of these cases here, and all these athletes are just a pawn in the NCAA's system here. You can't justify there's no coincidence that Chase Young, the top player in college football, and James Wiseman, possibly the top player in college basketball, both received suspensions on the same day for rulings where, especially in Chase Young's case, he paid back the loan from a family friend. Mm-hmm. There's no case there to be made that he was currently violating. If he did violate, he had already justified whatever wrong, quote-unquote, that he had committed.
Right.
With the James Wiseman situation, that was common knowledge. I mean, Penny Hardaway never hid those numbers, never hid that fact. It was out there in the public. The NCAA knew. They granted him freshman eligibility in March, told him he would be able to play, and then came back with a case against him, and now we're seeing the pushback against it. And I think that the Javon Quinterly situation is an extension of this. The NCAA is fighting back against laws that are being passed across the country allowing pay for play, which is poorly worded, I'll give that, but rules that allow college athletes to make money off their
name and likeness. Yes.
The NCAA does not want that to happen. So what do they respond with? They respond by killing the image of these athletes. You start making them villains in the public eye, telling people that this is why we can't allow them to go do things on their own, because they're breaking the rules and they're doing things that cannot be regulated under this new system. That is the NCAA's goal in all of this, by denying Javon Quinterly his waiver and his appeal, by suspending James Wiseman, by suspending Chase Young. They want to make the public view college athletes, college students, as villains in the system as they continue to make money off of them with no compensation towards these athletes other than a cost of living stipend and a scholarship.
Well, very well said.
Seriously, like, it feels like at times, because right here, you heard Greg Byrne talk about it. You heard him in this, if you read the press release, say that Javon and his family have been through more, he said, than any other collegiate athlete ever, right? To put it in poor way of saying it by me, I may be paraphrasing, but seriously, like, I mean, it feels like they're making an example.
That's exactly what it is.
Out of Javon Quinterly. When he very rightfully deserves to be playing the sport he loves, and he shouldn't be, you know, if he stays till his senior year, he's going to be playing at 24 years old.
And it's a false narrative.
Why would you do that?
A false narrative that they know that the public can't see through. They know that the general public can't get access to these documents. They can't look through these records. They can't access this inside information. And so they can put out whatever they want and give whatever reasons they want for their ruling. And you're seeing coaches, athletic directors, parents push back against it. And now it's just a shame that lawyers are having to be brought into these situations.
It's not a shame. It needs to happen because the NCAA has gone unchecked for so long. Just everybody's assumed that's the ruling. They are the law. That is point blank, period.
But for these families, to have to go out and pay a lawyer when they're not receiving anything off of their name and likeness? What sense does that make? You now are having to fight just to be a part of an organization that will not pay you by hiring a lawyer and paying that lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a completely backward system that the NCAA is using, and it's time for a complete overhaul of the amateur model that they're holding on to so desperately.
Well, and in the meantime, you've got, you know, you've got this whole, we've dealt with it for 2 years now. You've got the whole FBI scandal going on where you've got people on tape, arranging and doing actual cheating by your, like, by your own definition of the rules if you're the NCAA.
Yes.
You've got real people doing real stuff and getting caught doing it. And you're not even batting an eye at it.
Right. First. And it's the double standard. Again, these coaches, they're making millions, which rightfully so. I think that coaches should be paid whatever their market value is.
That's right.
I also think players should be able to make whatever their market value is. But these coaches, there's such a double standard. A player accepts, you know, however much money from a coach, and the player is ruled ineligible. The player isn't allowed. And here's the other thing. The NCAA knows this, and this is why they're able to continue this scheme that they've got and that they've been prolonging. They know that these athletes need them to get to the next level. And basketball players are trying to prove that narrative wrong, but football players don't have a choice. Football players, there is no minor league system currently. There is nowhere for them to go. So if the NCAA chooses to suspend them for whatever actions they go through, they can't fight back. They're stuck in this system, and it's going to take change, and I hope that these laws that are being passed across the country can help lead to that. But I really think that the NCAA is going to fight back until the last possible moment as they hold on to the revenue share that they currently have.
That's right. Guys, let's get back to the game very quick. Alabama FAU.
All right, couple more notes, and then we'll get to our guests here.
That's right. Alabama 70, FAU at 59, a 19-point win for the Tide. You're looking. One thing I'm looking at, and I didn't see it before now. Well, two things, really. One, 11 turnovers for the whole game for the Tide. That's pretty good. And I think two of them came in the last 2 minutes of the game where we had walk-ons Adam Cottrell and Brenton Johnson out there. Two, I'm looking at, let's not bat an eye at this. This is a huge upgrade from, I believe we had 17 turnovers in the loss against Penn. And Steels managed to score more points somehow. Blows my mind, right? But two, 34 points in the paint, which is, I'm looking at the shot chart now. We missed, only four or five shots in the paint the whole game?
Definitely.
Whereas we only made like five shots in the paint in the last game.
Right.
Let's talk about improvement here. How about that? And a lot of that comes at the hands of, again, Javion Davis just played an Albus mine. Good for him.
It was a great game. Let's go ahead. We'll take this break. We'll come back. We have the sports editor from the Independent Rhode Island up next. He'll get us prepared for the Rhode Island Rams.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Welcome back into the Bama Baseline Podcast. I'm James Fletcher here. We got a special interview for you guys today. Beat writer for the Rhode Island Rams, Will Gagan, is on the phone. Will, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing good. Really interested to hear what you have to say about these Rhode Island Rams. I know we've all been anticipating this matchup. A true road game for Alabama against a mid-major opponent in the A-10. What can you tell us about the Rams team this season? How have they looked so far?
Yeah, sure. So 1-1 so far. They won their opener over LIU relatively easily and then lost at number 7 Maryland on Saturday. So coming in at 1-1 to this game, they're certainly going to be looking for a big win. High expectations for them this year. Last year, they lost a bunch of seniors from the year before, lost their head coach, Dan Hurley. So a new coach took over. A couple guys back, a lot of new guys coming in. So it's definitely a different kind of year. They had some ups and downs, really didn't shoot the ball well, but they kind of put it together toward the end of the year, ended up making a run to the A-10 tournament semifinals. So they really were looking to build off that as they come into this year. They scheduled tough. They're hoping to put together an NCAA tournament kind of resume. They'll be looking for this game against Alabama to be a big part of that if they can get a win.
Yeah, talk about this game against Alabama. How big is it for a school like Rhode Island to host a Power 5 school in Alabama, not only for their resume, but for the fans and for the school as a whole?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my fellow beat writers, Bill Koch of the Providence Journal, just tweeted out the other day, this is the first time an SEC team will be playing at the Ryan Center, URI's home court. So it's a pretty big deal. They don't get it, it's tough for teams in the A-10 at that sort of mid-level to bring in Power 5 teams. Power 5 teams don't want to play on that kind of team's home court because, they know it's going to be a tough game. So it's a big opportunity for URI to get a potential big win. But like you said, it's also big for the fans to give it kind of a big game feel. Certainly one of the bigger home games we'll have this year.
Yeah, we've seen a few SEC teams go on the road already against smaller opponents. Our rival Auburn obviously played at South Alabama earlier this week. And do you see that as something that's beneficial to the game of college basketball, these Power Fives going on the road? Because it helps their strength of schedule, but it also helps these mid-major teams and their tournament hopes.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, a few years ago, it just seemed like it was kind of a stalemate between these Power 5 teams and teams outside that group who were still, in relatively big conferences like the Atlantic 10. So I think it's nice to see that it seems to be that's breaking a little bit where teams are willing to go to the home courts of a team like Rhode Island. And hopefully that does continue. I think it is really good for the game. Like you said, it's good for both teams. To be able to have that chance. I think a few years ago it was tough for an A-10 team to really build an NCAA tournament type resume without taking some chances. And you also they don't want to necessarily take bye games. They're trying to negotiate home and homes, but it's difficult to do. So I think it helps everybody to get these kind of games for sure.
Yeah, let's go ahead and look at this Rhode Island roster. What can you tell me about Jeff Doughton, senior guard? What does he bring to the team, the leading scorer? And then who else do you see as the kind of the leaders of this Rhode Island team?
Yeah, so Jeff Doughton is definitely the sort of the unquestioned leader. He's a senior. He came in as a freshman to a pretty talented team back in the 2016-17 season. And ended up grabbing the starting job in February because of an injury, and he has never let it go. He's kind of been running the team ever since then. Talented kid. He's a strong leader, super competitive. Last year in the A-10 tournament, he had some of the best games of his career, and the team revealed that they call him Tournament Jeff at that time of year because he's just a hyper-competitive guy. He steps up his game, and he really leads the way for the team. He can score when he has to. Great distributor. Doesn't turn the ball over much. So he's been just a steady presence for them for 4 years. And then the other guy who's really a strong leader for them, the other senior, Cyril Langevin. He didn't make quite as big of an impact early on as Jeff Doughton did, but had some big games for that team that made the NCAA tournament. He had a big game in a second round NCAA tournament game against Oregon, kind of showcase what he would be able to do, and he's been pretty awesome since then. Tremendous rebounder, one of the best rebounders in the country, and a real driving force in terms of his competitiveness as well.
Yeah, and talk about Coach David Cox taking over. Of course, Hurley, big shoes to fill after he left, but how has he done in the adjustment period, and what does he bring from that Hurley staff?
Yeah, I mean, so he was the associate head coach with Dan Hurley, so a lot of the same approaches, the same offensive and defensive principles, and I think the biggest adjustment last year, it seemed from the outside at least, was just trying to find his sort of voice as a true leader. Dan Hurley was a fiery guy and and David Cox is a little less so, at least in terms of vocal, of how he is vocally. But I think that, you know, he's found his voice, and the team has adjusted to him. They had a few games early on last year where they sort of laid an egg. They just didn't have the effort they needed. And I don't think that will necessarily happen now. It seems like, you know, they may not play well. They may not shoot well. But I don't think that effort is going to be a problem. I think they've kind of found their groove with each other now. And David Cox in his second year is hoping for big things.
Yeah, and do you see any guys on this team as kind of breakout potential players, guys who you think could make the leap this year, or maybe coming into the team in their first season? Who should we be on the lookout for in this game and moving forward?
Yeah, so a couple guys. So Tyrese Martin is a sophomore, and he had a pretty strong freshman year. Similar to Jeff Doughton, actually, where he came in and grabbed the starting job sort of midway through the season. He had some great games in A-10 conference play last year. Just a really strong, steady player, a wing guy, plays the three. Good defender, good shooter, pretty good at getting to the basket. And you can see just a lot of potential with him. He's a potential all-conference kind of guy for them down the road, potentially this year, if there's enough shots to go around. So he could have a big year. And then the other guy who sticks out is a freshman. So I think it'll be a little bit of an up-and-down ride for him. But Jacob Toppin, his brother, Obi, is at another A-10 school, Dayton, and was the A-10 player of the year last year. He was kind of a breakout star. Jacob, similar athleticism. He's put on a couple of dunk shows already, a couple of highlights. So they're looking for good things from him. We'll see, you know, how it goes as a freshman, kind of breaking into the lineup. But certainly he'll be asked to do some things, and he has a lot of potential.
Yeah, and I see you guys looking ahead at your schedule here, heading to Montego Bay, going to play another one of our SEC rivals, LSU, down the road. How big is it? Of course, Alabama's heading to the Atlantis tournament. How big are these tournaments where these kids get to go out and experience something that they've usually, in most cases, never had before, and be able to go to these unique places?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotta be really cool for them, and I know it's an opportunity that pretty much every team at a certain level is trying to get into these kind of tournaments, because it helps your NCAA chances, helps with team bonding, and it helps, as you said, with just giving these guys a really cool experience, and that's ultimately what college basketball is about to some extent. So it's cool for these guys. I'm sure they'll enjoy their trip. You know, the seniors on this team, they've been to Hawaii, they've been to, they had a New York tournament, and now Jamaica, so some big stuff for them.
Yeah, and before we let you go here, I got to get your take on the VCU Rams, fellow A-10 school, taking down the LSU Tigers. We were following that game closely, and big fans of them.
Yeah, VCU is tough. I think they're kind of the team to beat in the A-10 this year. I was reading about it today. It's pretty cool how they basically put in the contracts of all their coaches that if the coach leaves, they've got to come back with their new team and play at VCU. So that was the situation with Will Wade, and obviously VCU kind of relished that chance and scored a big win. It was a big win for the A-10. The A-10 is looking for some big things this year, looking for some signature wins like that, and they certainly got one last night.
All right. Once again, Will Gagan on with us, Rhode Island beat reporter. Will, let our listeners know where they can find you and keep up with what you're putting out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Twitter at Rhodey Will. And you can also check out the newspaper website is independentri.com.
All right. Thanks for coming on today, Will.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
That was Will Gagan, Rhode Island beat reporter for the Independent Rhode Island. Great interview, and we'll be back with you next.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Okay, I want to take you in here and give you listeners a look into what's going on here in the Bama Baseline Studios. It's absolute chaos right now. Nobody knows what's happening. LSU is currently playing MVCU. I've got it pulled up on my computer. I'm thrown up for a loop. I misread the stat sheet in the last segment.
It's okay because you need to tell them what's going on.
I'll get to that in a second. I made an error saying something. Right now, LSU is playing at VCU in the Siegel Center. It's a gold out, folks, in the Siegel Center.
Gold out. They got the.
I feel like that's the wrong one.
It's a gold.
LSU is purple and gold.
Well, they got Will Wade Hate Week. It is an actual swing.
Will Wade Hate Week at VCU. This is the return game for Will Wade at VCU. A lot of
negotiated as a part of his buyout.
As part of his buyout, he had to come back and play in VCU. It's not looking good, folks. 8:22 left in the first half. It's 24-22 VCU. Will Wade's on the sidelines. His shirt is bigger than ever. it seems like now it's 25-22.
This is good podcasting here. A play-by-play narration of an event that will have been 24 hours old by the time our listeners.
I'm telling you, it is just.
Hear this.
If you haven't watched the game by the time you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to keep you up to date. VCU resorting to, you know, press offense and trapping in the half court in the first half. You love to see this. You love to see this. It seems like Will Wade, his shirt gets larger with each passing game. You know, like with each win, the shirt just gets exponentially bigger. Like, I feel like Will Wade wears a larger shirt than I do. Right? Yeah, but anyways.
That's a two-minute segue into our SEC rundown for the week. We're gonna talk to you guys about everything that's happened in the SEC. Starting, of course, with LSU and VCU going on as we record on a Wednesday. But let's take it back about 24 hours ago.
The greatest 24 hours.
People less were, than that, folks.
Well, 24 hours ago, there was preparations underway.
Yeah.
For the return game.
Let's go!
Evansville on their way to face Kentucky.
Mm-mm-mm.
And you had a former Kentucky standout coaching the Evansville Purple Aces.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to apologize for what I said. For once in my life, I gave Calipari just a tiny bit of credit for him and his team. And what does he do? He does this. I take back everything I said about Calipari. It is over with. He is terrible. He doesn't know how to coach the best talent. They're going to lose in the round of 16 again this year. It's going to be a great time. Thank you, Calipari, for proving me right.
Let's flatly say what happened to Kentucky last night. Everybody on three, flatly say what happened. What did they do? 1, 2, 3. They lost.
They lost.
Where did they lose at? 1, 2, 3.
Rupp Arena.
Oh, you hate to see it.
They had a chance. They had chance. They had multiple chances.
No. When the Evansville Purple Aces walked through the door, they had more than a chance to beat them right then. Let's talk about this for a second.
Even down late, they had chances to win the game. But, like, Calipari, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
Rupp Arena against your Kentucky, number one.
You paid $90,000 for them to come in and win.
Evansville walks through the door and steps foot on the court. Have a chance to win.
Walter McCarty used his inside information on the program to full extent.
They paid $10,000 to each player to come and win that played that night. Come on.
I think a lot about it was 2006, William and Mary beat North Carolina as a 15 seed in the tournament.
Right.
Obviously, you think about UMBC beating number one overall seed Virginia the first 16.
National championship next year.
That's right. And we're talking about neutral court, too. We're not talking about this happens at Rupp Arena.
This is,
I don't know if you've ever been to Rupp Arena. You're not supposed to win there.
This reminds me of when Appalachian State beat Michigan.
Yeah. It is very similar to that.
It is because, you know why? It wasn't supposed to happen.
It was.
Round of applause for Trevor.
Supposed to happen. The home team had the advantage. They paid way too much money for that team to come down there. And they still had a chance, down by three, to pull something out, and they ruined it.
They couldn't even get an alumni discount from Walter McCarty. Or maybe 45, give them half off. No. 45,000.
What you mean? It's Evansville Purple Aces. That is the discount. You're welcome. You pay $90,000 to take this L. Holla at your boy.
Oh. How old, real quick, game break, how old is Skylar Mays?
Skylar Mays.
He's shooting free throws right now with 7:32 left in the game, in the first half. And he just, well, no, I'm sorry, Trenton Watford shooting free throws, but they were zoomed in on Skylar Mays.
He's 22 years old.
Is that it? He looks way older. I don't know what they're putting in the water down there, but he looks maybe 30.
Rough times down in Baton Rouge.
Right?
I mean, there might be something in the water. I mean, you were talking about Smart's hairline a second ago.
Well, we need to talk about this. Javonte Smart, you know, an excellent ball player. What has happened to his hair? I need somebody to give me a report on this. And I feel bad talking about it because it might be something medical. I have no clue. But
no, it's not a Trae Young thing.
I need somebody to tell me what's happening here.
Hey.
Because it just doesn't look right.
Save it for the home game. Save it for the home game.
Well, I mean, yeah, but still, he might cut it by then.
Oh, yeah.
It does not look good. He's come back into
the game. You should just get a fat head of him with his bad haircut.
This is a really good game, by the way. You know, it's the first half. It's a three-point game.
Anyways.
Hey, guys, look, hey. Both teams undefeated, right? 1-0 LSU, 2-0 VCU. You know what that means?
Something's got to give.
All right.
We've lost complete control of this SEC wrap-up. Let's go ahead and run through these other games here. Dang. Xavier takes down Missouri in overtime.
You know, and here's the thing. We need to talk about this, too. Like, why can't our conference... Our teams in our conference help us take care of beating our rivals, our main basketball rivals. Xavier, of course, our third biggest basketball rival. Why can't, what?
What are they doing in Missouri?
What are you doing? You got to help us out here. You know, let's run through the list one more time. Our biggest basketball rivals, just for the audience. Let's run through the list.
Go ahead.
It starts with Creighton.
Yes.
At one. Wichita State.
Wichita State.
Xavier, Dayton
of Ohio, yep.
Dayton of Ohio, yes, and then hell, I don't know Mississippi State.
You know,
it gets real foggy after four.
Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and South Carolina. I don't know why. South Carolina is always a weird team to play.
It's just Frank Martin.
You know, he's trotting out there basically like green berets.
Prison ball.
South Carolina.
You know, it's like the longest yard, but for basketball. That's South Carolina.
Auburn is our fifth biggest rival.
I don't think so.
In the SEC.
Oh, in the SEC.
In the SEC.
Yeah.
I hate Tennessee in basketball more than I hate Auburn. I hate Kentucky in basketball more than I hate Auburn. Mississippi State, LSU, and then South Carolina.
And of course, our most respected opponent, Murray State.
Murray State, of course. Hats off to
Murray State at all times.
Coach Mac McMahon. I can't say enough about this guy.
I think Murray State might be the only time I've ever been scared to heckle the opponent. honestly, that's the only time I've ever been scared to heckle the opponent because I know John Morant would just have lit it up.
The only time I've ever been held back from saying anything about the opponent was at a Memphis Navy game. I mean, what are you supposed to do? You're down seven. Mm-hmm. That you know they have the ball. What are you supposed to say to them?
They're the Navy.
It's the Navy.
You can't talk bad to the Navy. What are you going to do? Thank you for your service. That's your smack talk.
The Navy beats you on your home floor. You tip your cap to them.
That's right.
That's all you can do at that point.
Yeah, you can't talk to the Navy, the There's Army, or the Air Force.
Let's look back around the SEC, though.
Auburn won by 1 point.
Because I believe this is just me. I believe congratulations are in order to Bruce Pearl because because, like, playing this South Alabama team, I think they have four starters who
going on the road.
On the road.
True road game in a sellout crowd to South Alabama.
And they honestly should have lost. Like, if South Alabama can grab one rebound at the end of the game, that's their game to lose.
Freshman Isaac Okoro taking over at the end, getting the last bucket.
Honestly, good for them, because, like, that's a tough South Alabama team. You know, they return, I believe it was four starters to average 14 or more points per game last season. But good for them, honestly. That's a really good game.
You went the respectful route.
I'm also a big fan of these true road in-state games. I know a lot of coaches are scared of them, but
I like it.
I think it's a good Alabama's going to have one not classified as a true road game because it's played at Legacy Arena. Yep. But we're going to play Samford in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. I think that these are good because you're not scared of losing the crowd. You know that when you go to South Alabama as Auburn, the crowd's going to be in your favor. But it's good for those students to get that experience. Good for that school to have
a big name come through. Yeah,
a sellout in their arena. South Alabama, I'm assuming, hasn't had many sellouts in their history. But to have Auburn come in, it's big for the program.
Well, just these mid-majors in general. You look last season, how big of a deal it was that Alabama came to play Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches. Right, they basically closed the entire town down.
Yeah.
So they could, like, have the big party. They had a whiteout at Stephen F. Austin. You see what it means, these teams. It's obviously going to be, you know, at the end of the day, when you're looking at resume, it's obviously going to be, at worst, you know, a quad two loss. Or a quad two win.
And then I think what the most, like, the thing that, like, coaches are missing from it, and that, like, when you go through those types of things and you, like, been through it, it gets you prepared for tourney.
That's right.
Because you're going into extremely hostile environments that are not in your favor. And so you just need to have that experience sometimes. You know, so that way your players, when it, like, even during conference play, when you're going into a Tennessee or a Kentucky and you see all that blue madness already, you know, you're already kind of like, all right, it's another away game. It just happens. You know, like, we've already been through it. We've already been, like, this is nothing because they're expecting us. Mm-hmm. You know, but, like, other teams, like mid-majors, they're crazier than you guys because they're not used to seeing us all the time. So we have to be more on our toes than normal. The other team is playing more elevated because we're there.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's a great tool for your team to have, mm-hmm. to have those mid-majors in away games at their actual home floor. It's great for your team.
It is. And you see what's coming up for us just this coming Friday, Alabama going to Rhode Island. That's a big deal, which that was a part of a home-and-home, but that's a big deal.
I mean, that's the best way to get these done for the Power Five, because you don't want to go play all your games on the road.
No.
You want to have those home games, and so to flip the schedule every other year, have a road game against a mid-major and then have them in your own place. I mean, that's what we're doing with Stephen F. Austin also.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing to do. I want to touch on real quickly before we get out of this segment, Arkansas. All right. Talk about a turnaround by Eric Musselman. This team looks good. I've got them. I know, Trevin, you know I was high on them last year.
I know. You were high on them last year, and they didn't even have the same.
They went out kicking and screaming until they finally were
not
eliminated
from
the tournament.
Hey.
But Arkansas, I think they're a top 25 school, and they're going to have a big signing period. Already got Moses Moody. I think they're the front runners for a couple other guys, too. I think Eric Musselman is going to flip that program around quickly. And
They got a good they've been playing Rice, was the University of Northern Texas.
Not top talent,
but it's
what you're seeing out of them, they play.
That is true. I'm going to hold out on that because of the talent that they're playing. It's a new coach, new system. I'm not saying that it's easy to win these games, but it's just not to the level of talent that you have.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait and hold out on that until I see him play against Georgia Tech and Western Kentucky. And I'm leaving Western Kentucky in there because it's a true road game for them.
Mm-hmm.
At Western
Kentucky.
That's going to be a really good game.
Another mid-major road game against a team that has the potential to actually win their mid-major conference.
Rick Stansbury.
So I'm going to hold out for the them to go against Georgia Tech and Western Kentucky before I put an official evaluation on them. I'll definitely have my opinion on them before they head to Indiana in conference play. But I'm going to hold out until I see those two games first.
All right, that'll wrap up our third segment here. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up today with a list for you guys. We got a good one, so stay tuned.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
All right, guys, welcome to the final segment. This is Trevin's Time to Shine. We are going to be doing our list here today, and I came up with a great list for us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be doing our top five mascots not named Big Al. Okay, live animals do count, costumes do count. So we are going to start with James. James, top five, right. 5-1.
Remember the ground rules.
Remember the ground rules. Big Al does not count. Live animals do. Number five for you.
Number five, Tom Three at the University of Memphis. Live tiger on the field. It's pretty cool.
Okay,
right. Is it Tom Three or is it
Live Tigers? Hold
on. Is it Tom Three or Tom the Third?
Tom Three is what they call it. He is the third Tom, but they call him Tom Three.
Number four.
We're gonna go. I like the live mascots. We're going with the Arkansas Razorback.
Arkansas Razorback.
Not a real Razorback, but it's cool to see a live hog on the field. Not your traditional mascot.
A little bit of bacon.
Number three, Al and Alberta at the University of Florida.
They're a great couple.
Big fan of mascot couples.
Healthy relationships.
Any mascot couple you can find out there for me, I'm a big fan of it. I think that it's so cool to see when they've got the mascot couples. Mm. Number two. Now, this is where
I'm trying to think if there's other mascot couples.
I feel like there are.
But Al and Alberta are easily top two.
That's the big one. Yeah. That's the big one.
Yeah.
Prime time. Number two. The Stanford tree. It's such a train wreck.
It's hard. I mean, they trot this thing out onto the field every game.
It's not even the same thing every game, though. It's just random cloth put onto a wire cage and two eyes and a mouth, and they just run around in circles and dancing and jumping, and I don't know. Every time I see it, I can't help but laugh, and that's what I'm looking for in a mascot. So
All right. The
Stanford tree ranks right up there. Doesn't go the Stanford Cardinal. Their mascot's a tree. The tree is actually made of cloth.
You know, that's a great point. Why are they the Cardinals and they don't have a cardinal?
Well, singular cardinal.
Well, why a cardinal don't they have it's the tree. It's called a cardinal.
But there's a bird called a cardinal, right?
There is. It's the state bird of North Carolina, yes.
So then why would they just...
The Memphis
right, anyways,
red birds.
Anyways, number one. That's a question for a different day. Number one.
The trees are all over North Carolina.
What's your number one?
Would you please get the number one?
Number one needs a drum roll. Give me a drum roll here. Swinging Pete. At Oklahoma State, golf.
Just
State golf.
I'm
a big fan of Pete in general.
Okay.
But Swinging Pete is my favorite.
Big old pistol.
Swinging Pete with the golf club in hand, top tier logo. If you ever see it on a golf shirt, send it my way. Right. I'm always looking for a good Swinging Pete logo. We'll move on now.
All right, Luke, you're up. Top five mascots.
Give us your My number one right now is the VCU Rams. They're up 48-33 with a minute left in the first half over LSU, and they're just not looking back, folks. Number five, I think I got to go with Otto the Orange at Syracuse.
Otto the Orange.
Really fun to play with on NCAA 14 mascot mode because he just keeps rolling down the field.
Yeah. You just can't stop him. Four, I think I'm going with Sparty at Michigan State. Okay. He's just so buff. He's just so buff.
I work out. Yeah, I got you. All right, number three.
You know what? I'm going with Pistol Pete.
Pistol Pete?
Any of them.
Big fan of Pistol Pete.
I'm going with any of those. Two. This is a tough one.
This is tough.
I want to say.
You got it narrowed down.
I want to say, I know who my one is, but I want to say it's, Let's go with I don't know. Let's go with the Demon Deacon at Wake Forest.
The Demon Deacon.
I don't know what he is.
The irony of that name.
He's a Demon Deacon, which is just... How do you have that?
Who approved that? Like, a religious institution.
He's coming in on a motorcycle, right?
A religious school.
You just know he's here to cause trouble.
What do we want our mascot to be? Us, a Catholic university.
It's a Baptist university.
Baptist,
sir.
Excuse me.
It's a demon deacon, which is that's like an
they said.
Moron,
and
isn't it?
Here's what happened. The school said, "Let's name them the deacons," and then the students came in and said, "Let's be the demons." And they reached a compromise on the demon.
We'll just be both.
I mean,
we'll just be both.
If you can find a better explanation for me, please let me know. Because I don't.
What is he supposed to, is he supposed to be a preacher? What's he supposed to do? Like, he comes in all cool. Is he like one of those cool youth preachers that ride the motorcycle? Is he one of those?
He's a cool youth pastor.
He wears the Abe Lincoln top hat.
That is one of the most confusing mascots in college.
I do like it. I admire.
I'm a fan of him.
Give us your number one. Number one. Give me a drum roll. Big Red, Western Kentucky.
Big Red.
You can't not like him. He's got his mouth opens like the cone head. It's like on a swivel, right? Like on a hinge, and he devours anything in his path. Right.
Big Red, that is a great mouth.
I'm an admirer of Big Red. I love Big Red. It's just so weird.
It is.
All right, it's weird.
All right, I get to you. All right, the best list, my list, obviously. So at number five.
Hold on. Let's have all the fanfare here because he made this list all by himself. Here we go. All right.
Number five. I still have Reveille from Texas A&M.
That's a good one.
The little collie that'd be running around with them on the field.
That's a good.
I just love him. He just
top tier live dog.
I wanted a nice live dog mascot for all my dog lovers out there. And out of the SEC, I just think he's the prettiest.
Is it he or she?
It's the prettiest.
Let's not get in trouble. Let's not get canceled live on the air.
Gender neutral. All right, number four. I'm going to go with Osceola and Renegade, honestly. I'm going to switch it up. Osceola and Renegade. I like them at Florida State. I know, Luke, you're a fan of them. I know for sure. Yeah. I think my favorite part is when he falls off the horse. That's the best part. All right. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't do it a lot. You know, it used to happen like at least once a season.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He just fall off. Like they used to, the Renegade used to buck Osceola off the horse when they do the flame and spear thing at midfield.
Yeah.
And that was, it's a lot like the schooner. The Sooner
right. Oklahoma. Except a real person.
It just fell over. Yeah.
All right, number three.
I had a little more to say on
Osceola.
Big fan of mascots that respect the heritage of the Indian tribes. The Seminoles work along with the Seminole tribe to come up with their mascot and all their pregame rituals. So that's really cool to see. A lot of controversy
respecting
out there
the
over certain mascots, but Florida State has done what they can to eliminate that.
Good. Definitely.
Moving on to number three.
Number three, give me Bevo at Texas.
I'll take Bevo.
Give me
After
Bevo
After the
at Texas.
Disrespect he showed to Uga.
He deserves it.
Hey, Uga deserves it.
Don't go near Bevo if you're not expecting Bevo to Bevo.
Don't go near Bevo if you're not expecting Bevo to Bevo.
Like, come on, man.
What an arrangement of words. I've never
expected. It's like saying Buffalo seven times and calling it a sentence.
Ralphie is on my special mentions list.
Ralphie the Buffalo at Colorado.
He is on my special mentions
list. Big fan
list.
Of Ralphie.
Honorable mention, Ralphie. What a great.
Honorable mention.
What a great mascot. And they run him out
they
there.
They do. And they try to keep up with him.
Like the pony
so
at
like,
SMU.
So, like, I was watching something about that. I'm just going to handle on this for a second. They take a year of preparation for you to get ready to run with Ralphie. So they have the auditions for the people who run with Ralphie a year in advance. So that's the dedication they have Ralphie is well taken care of, well fed, and that they're doing the right thing.
Is this the Penn State drum? Is that where Purdue. Purdue's got the big drum.
Oh, yeah.
And they... they have to train you to be the big drum guy.
It's a big drum.
It is. You know, they got to have guys who carry
just,
it.
You can't just roll it out there. You right. got a team of people.
Does that count as a mascot? I might put that in my top five.
No. I want to redo my top five.
No.
Because we're clearly forgetting about Purdue people.
Hey, these are on the spot.
Hang on.
These are on the spot.
I got two more left.
Let's finish
number it. Two. The fans are going to hang me for it. I hate myself for it. It hurts my soul to say.
Would you just say it?
We're drumming here hard.
The Auburn Tiger, Aubie. I love Aubie.
Aubie is a great mascot.
Terrible school. Don't like them as a sports fan.
Oh, of course.
They're a great institution. They're a good institution. They're good.
He downgraded it from great to good real fast.
they're a good institution. But
they have
books. But Aubie is a great mascot.
He's got hands.
He's got. Thank you. That's the most underrated thing about this list.
If you're
going to be in a costume, please have hands so that way you can do things.
That should be on the required list for skills of a mascot. Opposable thumbs. Right.
I mean, Aubie too. Never in a bad commercial.
I don't think so.
Just having a good time, just getting beat by Big Al. It's all good. All right, number one.
All right.
Actually, no. Stop. Special mention. I got to give a special mention to Dartmouth College Keggy the Keg.
It's official.
He's just a keg. It's great.
Special mention, Keggy the Keg.
Go Big
Green. All right, now official. Also, number one.
I feel like I'm qualified to use the Purdue drum after all this.
Okay, you can use the Purdue drum as your special mention.
Very good, James. Very good.
I'm actually drumming.
Hold on. Are you just on like Google looking up top mascots?
I know my top five. I just need the names. So I have him on here. And then I was looking on here. And then there's Dartmouth College, Keggy the Keg.
He does this every week. He's always Googling his list as we speak.
All right, number one, my favorite mascot, of course, goes to Phil Knight in Oregon, the good old Oregon Duck.
Oh, we forget about the Oregon Duck.
The good old Oregon Duck.
Wait, this begs the question, because he's an awesome mascot.
Right.
Who has done more? Who has had the biggest cultural impact, the Aflac Duck or the Oregon Duck?
The Aflac Duck. He's been saving me money on insurance.
We're going Oregon Duck here.
Oregon Duck?
We're going Oregon Duck.
The Oregon Duck just exists. Aflac gives you a purpose.
The Oregon Duck can't talk.
The Oregon Duck, right. Aflac Duck can talk.
And he's got a pretty good catchphrase.
Do you sell you insurance? But it's a niche insurance, right?
Hold on. Who do you think
are
has...
Are you taking concern with the company?
I would never take concern over Nick Saban's championship winning.
And also, let's also remember that the Oregon Duck only appears about 12 times a year on a college football Saturday. On college football Saturday. The Aflac Duck is everywhere, every time, any time of day.
The Oregon Duck, though, is universally known as one of the lead promoters of Nike products.
Oregon is the Nike school, and him being the mascot who wears
whatever jersey they are wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, they break out a new costume every week for him just like they do a new jersey. And so I think that, I mean, think about how widespread those Nike combat gloves have become.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the first person you saw wearing those?
Mark Ingram.
You almost got him there. Oregon Duck was pioneering the way as a mascot, again, with hands, wearing those wide receiver gloves with the Oregon O right in the middle of them.
Did you guys know that they had to actually buy the logo from Disney for a while there? Because the Oregon Duck mascot used to look very similar to Donald Duck. So they had to buy the rights from Disney in order to use that logo for a while there, and then they changed
it. Is Donald Duck a top three duck?
He's probably number one duck.
Is he number one duck?
He's probably number one duck.
No, don't get me started
Hold on, Trevor. Let's get started.
James, please
get top ducks.
Please get started on top ducks. Please, we're asking you.
You want me to go 3-1 or 1-3?
Go 3-1.
This is top a new ducks. List.
Now, let's James, give all the fanfare.
James special right. list, three ducks, go.
Bonus list. Number bonus. Three, the Oregon Duck.
Okay,
good.
Number three,
we've covered that.
Yes. All right, two, what you got for two?
Number two is Daffy Duck.
Daffy
over Donald.
See,
Daffy.
That's, okay. All right.
I'm a big Looney Tunes guy.
Okay. I don't know if I would put Daffy on the dark horse here.
I think he provides much more comedic value than Donald.
So then who's your number one duck?
Number one, this one, undisputed, number one duck. The Peabody Ducks in Memphis, Tennessee. They have their own penthouse, people. How many ducks do you know that live in a penthouse? How many ducks do you know that march around a pond?
Are we forgetting about Scrooge McDuck?
Scrooge McDuck, that's a good dark horse. But I don't think he's top three.
Really?
I mean, I'm talking the Peabody Ducks, led out by celebrities all the time. I mean, these ducks are trained to march from an elevator.
Yeah, but that's regionally.
Down around. And, well, Lee Corso did it just a few weeks ago. Led the ducks.
He was in Memphis.
Led the ducks on a march. If you're a celebrity and you go through Memphis, one of the top things to do is lead the charge of the Peabody Ducks. And guys, that's why they're the top ducks.
Guys, it's halftime of this LSU-VCU game, and LSU's down 12, 50-38.
All right. Good game for the VCU Rams.
VCU, I'm going to say it. And we're going to find out later because we're going to finish this podcast sometime. The game's going to be over. But I'm going to say it. Here's a prediction for the second half. VCU buries, they just, you know, condemn LSU in the second half to eternal Ram Nation.
All right.
Please clap. Thank you.
This podcast has run long. You're probably wondering when it's going to end. That time is now. We want to thank you for joining us on the Bama Baseline podcast. And I'll let everyone sign off for themselves. I'm James Fletcher.
I'm Trevin Piernawill.
And I'm Luke Ratliff. You've been listening to the Bama Baseline podcast.